So that was how my career started. So that was pretty amazing. That's the high point of my life, I guess, almost. And
what a story.
It was a lovely story. And that, so Italy became obviously more dear to me than ever because of that connection.
Association.
Yes, yes.
So bring us to Concord now.
Okay. Well, having had those experiences, you know, I just decided that, you know, publishing, in my mind, was all happening on the East Coast. I don't know where I got this notion, because obviously there are publishing companies all over. But in my mind, it had to be like New York or New England or something. And I, you know, had been, you know, going through a divorce, so that was why it was easier to pick up and leave at a certain point. And I just had a friend in the publishing world named Nancy Ekholm Burkert, who was an illustrator, is an illustrator. And she had said, well, I know a writer in Lincoln named Jane Langton. Go see her. And so I felt like I had some sort of connection. And I just, you know, on a whim decided this was the place to come. And I decided, because of all the disruption in our lives, and a good place to come would be this area. But also I was concerned about schools for my daughter. But she'd been an amazing student so far. She went to a school named Breck School, which is an Episcopal school, private school in Minnesota. So her grades were very good. And then she had gone to school in Italy, in a 13th century castle overlooking Florence, which was a little bit of an unusual situation as well. And so when we applied to schools, and I think we'd applied to like Andover and Exeter, Miss Porter's, Ethel Walker, some of the schools that are in the area. And I think Andover and Exeter, she would have had to wait another semester and resubmit again. And she could, because of a cancellation, she was able to get into Farmington, Miss Porter's school. And so that's where she was accepted. So at that point, it became easy to move because I felt she was safe and in a good environment. And I had originally thought if she ended up going to school here, I would move to this area, Concord and Boston and Lincoln. And if she was accepted, you know, there, I would go to Hartford. And for some reason, I just couldn't deal with Hartford as a city. I just thought, this is not the amazing, wonderful-looking city I had planned. And so I thought, well, they're close enough that I could still be in, you know, in Boston or Concord. And that's why when I ended up coming here. And there was a place, I think on Musketaquid Road here in Concord, where the people needed a house sitter. And I had first thought that it would be something that at least for a month or so I could get my bearings and figure out what to do next in my life in terms of where to live and such. And luckily for me, it turned out to be a whole year. And it was a very large estate, and there were many people in the family and all squabbling over who would get what. And so it was unable to be sold, I think, right away. And it gave me time actually to finish my second book, which was the story of Bafana. Mm. So that was kind of amazing and fun for me, because I could still bring Italy along with me in my thoughts, you know, and think about Italy, even though I was having a winter in New England.
So that was in what year?
Well, I think I came here in 1979.
79.
Yeah. Oh, do I have time for one really quick story, or are we running out of time?
Tell me a quick story, but also, if you would, comment for us on the arts community here in Concord, and what sort of support or affirmation or that you felt from this community.
Okay. Should I do that first and then go back to my story?
Choose your own.
Okay.
Path.
Yeah, let's do that first. When I first came to Concord, and of course I was, working at home, and after a while, I think, I don't know how it happened now exactly, but I know that at that time, the Emerson umbrella was just getting started. And that's a wonderful, wonderful center, art center here in Concord, that had been an old school, and for many years it was left alone, abandoned. Big thing in my life is the story of abandonment, the threads of abandonment. So here was this wonderful building that was not used. And there were many concepts like, should it be, you know, housing for elderly? Should it be condos? Should it be this or that? And somebody had the remarkable idea that it perhaps best would suit artists in the community if it could be somehow made into an art center. And I know one of the early founders was a wonderful woman named Ellie Bemis, and her family's well known here in Lincoln and Concord. And Kay DeFord was another woman who was actually very actively interested in theater, wonderful spirit. And there were, I'm sure, others, but those were the two that stuck out in my mind as co-founders of this wonderful place. And as it was beginning and, you know, sort of worked on to be made habitable again, I guess it had been, you know, left alone all these years. So they needed a bit of cleanup to happen there and painting and whatnot. But I remember I was one of the early people that saw the spaces, and I still at that time wasn't sure I wanted to be there. I thought, why would I want to be here when I could just work at home? And but then, you know, they were able to convince me that it was a good place and there would be an artistic community and other people would be there to exchange ideas and whatnot. And it, indeed, it has turned out to be just a wonderful, thriving artistic community here in Concord that everyone loves and supports in so many ways. But in those early days, as I said, I could walk through the many rooms and sort of decide what room I wanted, you know, what space I wanted. And because my work is relatively small and because I didn't have a lot of money, I thought, okay, a small room, not much rent. So I chose the room that I actually have still to this day. And it's looking out over the street there, Stowe Street. And I loved it because it had, you know, I could see the life on the street. I could see people walking their dogs. I could see children coming home from school. I was close to the library, which is such an important thing in my life. And the post office, you know, and it just seemed like the right place. I didn't want to be looking out the parking lot or the garbage dump or whatever. So that was, to me, that was essential, like a room with a view, you know, like the Henry James book. And so it was very important to have that. And I just decided that was the place for me, and I've been there ever since. And it has, you know, grown so much and has gone through so many different directors and approaches and ideas. But it's still the wonderful place, I think, that it was spiritually and mentally and, you know, in every way. It's a very supportive community. I know when my mom died that, you know, so many people came forward and came to Mom's memorial service and wrote cards and letters and hugged me in the stairway. So I guess it's just been the right place for me to come. But
and there's an active interaction amongst the artists there.
There is, yeah, and we have
review of reviewing each other's work, or how does it? I'm sure it's more informal.
It is more informal. Like, you know, you can just run downstairs and say, what do you think of this? Or how does this illustration work for you? And I know sometimes, you know, there was in my new book, I have a picture. It's a book called The Year Comes Round, which is a book of haiku poems. And my hardest illustration was actually the beginning illustration, which has a window frame. And I wasn't sure how to do that in colored pencils. So, yeah, it's the book that's right there, if I can just show that first image. It's just, it was a hard one because I couldn't think how to portray a window in colored pencils. So, actually, I went back to my love of printmaking, and I used what's called a collagraph. And a collagraph is, you know, just, if you can picture a wooden board, and I cut pieces of sponge, which are these images right here, and I took some yarn, which is this piece here, and I took some burlap, and
inside
I,
okay.
Yeah, and I, well, I put them on a wooden board, glued them down, waited for that to dry, covered it with shellac so that little bits of it wouldn't be coming off, used blue paint and my brayer and rolled the blue paint over this whole construction, which is called a collagraph. And then printed that, put the paper, the damp paper on that, ran that through the press, and that created the image. And then I just needed to make a window frame, which I did with the colored pencils. But that was one thing I was stuck on too, just how to make the wooden frame and have it really look like the wooden frame. And there was a wonderful watercolor artist next door to me, whom I knew because she had been one of my students in my children's book class, actually. And she said, well, why don't you try this or why don't you do that? And so really I listened to her ideas because the first image, which now I can't remember what it was, she said, well, that doesn't really look like quite like the window. And so you do get inspiration and suggestions, and you obviously have the right to not choose them or not listen, but I listened, and I think it's a better book for that. And I think it came through looking more like a window than what I started with. So, yeah, you do get inspiration, and you, you know, one of the artists might have a show somewhere, so you go to that if you can attend that, and they in turn would come to your opening. And so, like I said, we're there for each other, so it's been just a wonderful thing to have.
That was a great example you gave.
Oh, thanks. So just to finish up, I think I have my last thing was, which is also nice because it ties us into Concord again. You know, about a year later after I had finished my Bremerton book and it had been published, I was still in this, at the end of the year, still at this wonderful place where I was house-sitting on Musketaquid Road. And I got a call early in the morning. And you have to realize, like, here I am in this big, empty house, again, where there's nothing except me, you know, all these burglar alarms and whatever. And in the evening, if I wanted to sit and eat, like, I had a huge dining room table like we have here and chandeliers and this and that. And here I'd be at the end eating my little bowl of cottage cheese or whatever. So it was, you know, again, a story of loneliness in a big way, but a time where I could finish my book. But one morning I get this phone call, like at, I don't know, 4 or 5 in the morning. And I actually had not had my own phone. I think I had a mailing address and an answering service that was based in Boston. So nobody really could get in touch with me, except people that I knew. And one of my friends was my friend Jane Langton. And somehow someone must have given the number where I could be reached, because I, you know, this was not a number everybody could get hold of. So I get this call and I'm a little irritated because it's, you know, early. And it's also a voice that I don't know who this is, and not many people, I said, could reach me. And so at the end of my, it was like from Chicago or someplace, and I said, well, I'm not sure I know who this is. And they wanted to determine that they were speaking to me, so I determined that, yes, you know, they were speaking to me. And the woman said, oh, my dear, you've just won the Caldecott honor. And it was just so amazing to me that the library, you know, somebody that was one of the judges from the Caldecott committee had tracked me down and spoken to me about getting this this award. And, you know, subsequently I found out that that's the way it always happens. I guess it's the way it happens for the Academy Awards or something. You get this phone call right in the middle of the night or something. And the next wonderful part of the story, that of course I called my best friend Jane right away, and who had actually written, you know, this story after I had told it to her, rewritten it. And I said, Jane, you won't believe this, but someone just called me and they said I had gotten the Caldecott honor. Do you think that's for real? And she said, oh, well, guess what? I just won the Newbery. And that's the equivalent, of course, of the Caldecott. It's the award that you get for writing. And I had gotten the award for illustrating. So it was just such a totally serendipitous and, you know, unbelievable story in a way. So I think we went and had tea. We were known for getting together and having tea in the afternoon, and it was a lovely thing.
Well, this has been a lovely, lovely account of the development of an artist, and I feel so privileged to have witnessed it.
Oh, thank you so much, and thank you for making me feel so at home and comfortable.
While we're here in the trustees' room, I'd just love to hear you talk a little bit about the Concord Library and what it...
I love the library. Yes, you've hit on my other... You, yes, I love the library. And, you know, libraries have, again, I think I've inherited that from my mother, the love of libraries, because actually I brought her to the library every week, even at 98. And I would take her up to the periodical room, and she would look at all the, you know, lovely new magazines and sort of get in touch with what was going on. She loved that room. And really, we would come three or four times a week. Earlier, I had brought her almost every day. But towards the end, you know, it got a little more intermittent. I mean, it was hard for her to sit for so long. But the library was something that she, you know, we had until the very end. In fact, it was kind of painful to have to return books after she had passed away that were, you know, that were getting to be almost overdue. So the library was always a part of our lives, certainly. And I am a person who is not so greatly enamored of the computer, so I tend to want to do research on hand. I like to come to the library and look at books and read information and look at images rather than push buttons and look at the screen of something. And so for me, I just really physically like the feeling of being in the library to do things. During school years, I certainly spent time in school libraries, and wherever I lived, the library's a big important part of my life. And the last years, we were just living a block from the library, so it was easy to bring Mom here and to walk home, and it just was part of my setting. And as I said, that was one of the things when I chose to be at the Umbrella, that it was like a block from the library was very important to me. And so also, when I teach my class on how to do children's books, I always think it's important to show examples rather than just talking about them. You know, it's one thing to say, oh, well, this book has such and such, and if you go to the library and look at it, you'll see such and such. For me, when I have my class, I take out 30 books a week, different ones, obviously, each week, and I bring them to the school, and I show the kids, and it's hard. It's a lot of work, believe it or not. I have a little cart. Actually, at the end of one of my classes, one of my students, who's become such a good friend, bought me a book cart. You know, just a little thing on wheels that I guess people could use for a grocery cart, but I use it for the book cart. And that way I can get, you know, four big bags of books and 30 to 40 books and put it in my cart and take it to my car and then take it to my class and set them all up so that when they come into the room, they're not just going to be sitting there. They have 30 books to look at, and they're going to at least find 5 or 10 that they like, you know, and learn from looking at the images, because after all, it's how to create a book. It's not about, you know, I don't know, how to shop online or whatever. So I think it's important to bring that into the context of what you're doing. But I think the library is really the most important thing in a town, and I'm so grateful for it because it's here and it's for everyone to use. And it's interesting, out in the very front entrance as you come in the door, there's a quilt that somebody started many, many years ago when I first moved here, I think, of illustrators, well-known illustrators whose work is somehow represented. And the idea was that each person that was a quilter was given a book or could choose a book that they loved and make an image of some part of the book in a quilt, you know, with using thread and material and cloth and whatnot. And then a little strip of material was sent to each artist, and they just had to sign their name on this piece and submit that. And then when the quilt was all put together, you would have the image of the artist's work and then their signature down below. And it's still there. And it's as you come into the library. And I feel welcome every time I come into the library. So no abandonment here. I feel like, oh, they're waiting for me. They know, you know, that I do books. And sadly, some of the little name pieces have faded. But, you know, you have all the luminaries. You have the Maurice Sendak and the Trina Shard Hyman, whose work I've loved, and Garth Williams and Arnold Lobel, and, you know, it's just so nice to walk in and have that be the greeting to the library.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Well, it's been very special. Like I said, it comes at a hard time in my life, but it's kind of a continuation, too, because you know, I still feel Mom's presence here too. Because, you know, this was such a part of her life and very important for her. Yeah, and if, you know, as we're packing up, if you have a time just to read that my daughter wrote, if you both could just read.